you up? Okay, so you're both going to be speaking?
Yeah.
So let's...
Who's going to be...
It's
about half,
to be quite honest. He's
going to go first. Yeah, I'll
introduce him and then he'll go
first. Say something.
Testing 1, 2.
Is that enough for you, Dave?
Testing 1, 2.
Is that good enough for you, Dave?
Testing 1, 2. Testing.
More. Keep talking.
Is that good? How's the level on this? A little more?
Keep good. Talking until yeah. I tell you stop. There you go. Okay.
Good deal.
That can go in the pocket. It's got a belt clip on it, whichever you want to do.
All right.
Start in about 1 minute. He's out of the room. Basically about where the bottom of the necktie would be. Switch is there. Turn it on. And there's a couple of seconds delay before it becomes live.
Okay.
Check 1, 2.
Okay.
And then this is the technician who'll be in and out, so if you have any problems or questions, you can go to Dave here.
Okay.
There's a second speaker, Dave, and when he comes back, he'll put this on. Put the remote in the drawer on the net. Oh, here we go. For both your rooms, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We're going to give some folks just a couple of more minutes and maybe go into the restroom, so we want to give them plenty of time. Is everybody having a good time? How many has been here? How many of you, I guess, proper way to put it, how many of you are an alumni? Wow, about a third of the room. Well, good deal. Me too. How many went to San Diego? Fewer hands, but that's good. Well, good. I always have a good time when I come to these. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we want to get started with today's presentation. My name is Brian Perry, and I represent Perry Consulting. I'm also a VMware trainer. Some of you may have been in my class one time or another. Joe Christie, to my left, is a VMware employee, is also a VMware trainer. And together we thought we'd tag team this project a little bit, this presentation, try to give you a little more information about the P to V process. Now, how many of you have actually done a P to V? Well, then what are we here for? You guys have already done one. The P to V product has evolved over the last few months, especially in the last couple of years. So for many of you, like myself, we started with the first product. Now we've got the latest generation that's on a wonderful, the P to V Assistant and the Boot CD. They both evolved quite nicely. What we want to do first off this afternoon is get started with Joe and his presentation. Joe's going to go into the product, and then a little bit later on in the presentation, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the things that I've seen out in the field, some of the things that you'll, those of you that are on the forums, you'll see some of these topics because they get quite a bit of play. The P2B product being out there for quite a while has a lot of history to it. So we'll talk about some of the best practices for P2B that I've seen out in the field as well. So without further ado, we want to get started. And the first part of the presentation will be with Joe Christie.
All right. You folks are going to have to bear with me a little bit. I slipped and fell Sunday, and I hurt my foot badly. I didn't break any of the bones, but I'm doing huge quantities of codeine. So if I come off like a drooling, blathering idiot, I am, but at least today I get to blame it on the medication. Okay. So what we're going to do in my part is I'm going to run through just a little bit generic what is P2V, and then a little bit about our P2V Assistant, which is our suite of utilities. And we're pretty much going to go through that. We're going to try and go through this quick because I've got a bunch of stuff that I want to go through. He has some stuff that he wants to do. So we're going to ask you to hold all the questions until we get to the end. Okay? And then we'll try and save some time at the end to do some questions, a little question and answer. Okay? So what is P2V? Literally, it's just taking a physical machine and making an exact duplicate of that in a virtual environment, in a virtual machine. Okay? It's not a real complicated concept. Okay, P2VA is the set of utilities, the suite of utilities that you get from VMware that helps us to do this, hopefully in a more reliable and a more repeatable fashion. Okay, so the generic process, we're going to take an image of a physical computer's boot operating system, okay, transfer it to a virtual disk or to an image file, okay, reconfigure it so that it works in a virtual environment. We're going to talk a little bit about what some of the differences are and what you need to do to make that work. And then use the reconfigured disk as your boot operating system disk for a new virtual machine. Okay? And then copy over any data drives or partitions. And one of the things that we'll talk a little bit about as we go through here is that by far and large, the most time-consuming part of this is the file copy piece. Okay? So we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get through here too. Okay? So in the first step, you're going to create an image of the physical drive and transfer it into a virtual machine's virtual disk. Okay. You're going to use a helper machine with the P2V Assistant product to do that. And depending on whether you're using a physical machine or a virtual machine, you'll either do it directly to a physical disk or you'll have it create a virtual disk for you. Okay. What's going to be in that virtual disk? It's literally a clone of the original physical drive, the boot sector, the operating system, the applications, okay, all your device drivers, all your computer configuration information. So if you're familiar with SysPrep, this is not doing any of the SysPrep stuff. So if you bring the virtual machine up and you still have the physical machine up, you're going to have two machines with the same name, same IP address, everything. The nice thing about that is if you have an application that puts some kind of a stamp on its data file, say like an Exchange server that stamps the post office, when you bring up the virtual machine, as far as the data is concerned, it is in fact the same computer. Okay, so you don't have to do anything with that. Okay, and then you may have some hardware-specific utilities in there that you don't need anymore. And that's part of the cleanup process. Okay, so what's different in the virtual environment? Physical hardware is no longer there. The biggest piece of that is the host bus adapter for the boot drive. And that's the big piece of the configuration part of it. Okay, so when you do this, okay, as Windows guys, being glad to see a blue screen, not something we get to do often, but in this case, it's a good thing. Because when you see this, it means that the copy worked correctly, and now you have to go in and reconfigure it. Okay, so we need to replace the original drive, host bus adapter driver. We need to remove any unnecessary drivers, services, utilities. Some of them may cause problems. Some of them may just be sucking up resources that you could use for other things. Okay, so P2VA, again, is our suite of utilities. There's two pieces to it. There's a boot CD for imaging and the P2V application itself, which runs on the helper machine. And we can use that to clone and mount the image drive, or we can also use it also to reconfigure. The Boots CD is based on Nopix, for those of you that have had it. There's no real easy way to inject drivers into it, so there are some hardware issues. And when you go to do your copy, there's actually a, I think I've got a screenshot in here and a couple of slides coming up, where it talks about this has been tested with a limited set of hardware. The good news is that we don't need you to use our Boot CD to do the copy. If you've got another imaging product, you can use Norton Ghost or anything like that that you want. Or if you've got a backup, I mean, how many of us have servers that are in production that we don't back up? Well, if you've got a backup solution, you can actually do a restore into a virtual drive. Okay, and that'll work as well. So we really don't care much how you get the stuff there. The real big piece is the actual reconfiguration part of it. Okay, so the process for doing this, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to create a new virtual machine. Okay, now, you can use this to create virtual machines that will work on any of our platforms. Okay, but what you want to do is you want to make sure that you create the virtual machine with the platform that you're going to put the virtual machine on. So if you're using ESX, you want to create a new virtual machine with ESX, create the virtual disk, and then when you bring the helper machine up to do the copy, you're going to mount that virtual disk and clone the other physical drive into it. Okay, if you're going to do it on ESX, or if you're making it for another platform and you think you might ever want to put it on ESX, you have to configure it to use a SCSI drive. Okay. Then you're going to boot the physical computer with the P2V boot disk. Again, it's based on Nopix. It's going to come up and look at the hardware. If you have issues with it finding the hardware, you're going to probably want to find, it's probably easier to find another way to do the copy than to spend the time to try and get the right drivers into the boot CD. Okay. The more or less official stand on that was that it was given to you kind of as a courtesy, and we really didn't much support it, technically. The piece that you were really paying for was the reconfiguration piece. Okay. So again, you're going to clone the physical drive. After you boot it, you're going to test it. Again, how often are we glad to see a blue screen? That basically means that the copy worked correctly. The boot sector is over there. It's finding enough of the drive to start to boot Windows, and when it gets to the part where it loads the host bus adapter, it says, oh, I can't find a drive on that. I can't load that. There's no card there for me to load that driver for. Okay, so that's the point at which you have to reach in and reconfigure it, which is step 5. And then you're going to boot up the new virtual machine and clean it up. And we'll talk a little bit more about the cleanup. Okay. Because of the issues with NTFS and Windows NT, if you're going to clone an NT machine, and we really do have a lot of people that are doing that, and I taught this class last weekend and somebody said, well, how many people are moving NT machines? And say, pretty much anybody that's got something that was written in-house to run on NT and they can't find the source code and the guy that did it is dead and buried and the hardware is dying. Where are you going to buy hardware nowadays that you have device drivers for Windows NT? Okay, well, you're doing a virtual machine. Okay, that's a good thing. Okay. So the issue is, though, if you're going to do that, your helper virtual machine or your helper physical machine should be an NT box also. That way, when it reaches in and reconfigures and writes back, it doesn't do any XP or Windows 2003 kind of NTFS stuff that NT is not going to understand when you try and boot up the virtual machine. Okay, if you're doing 2000 or 2003, the helper machine can be pretty much anything. It could be 2000 professional or 2000 server or XP or 2003, we don't care. But if you're going to do an NT box, you want the helper machine to be an NT box as well. Okay. All right, so you boot it up. You're going to go through a couple of screens. Basically, this one comes up, gives you information about licensing. Okay, the CD is going to go in, and it's going to try and detect any hardware. If you have more than one network card or more than one hard drive that it finds, it's going to ask you which ones you want to use. I don't think I have a screenshot in here for that, but if it does, you can only copy one drive at a time. So if you want to use this tool to copy both drives, you're going to have to boot off it twice and pick one drive and then pick the other drive. Okay, but it's going to come up. It's going to also ask you if you want to use a static address or get a dynamic address. If you've got a DHCP server, you can go ahead and do that. When this screen comes up, you're basically done on the machine that you're imaging. Okay, so you've booted this thing off the boot CD. When you get to this screen, it's basically write down the IP address and move to the helper machine. Okay. Now, in this case, when I got to this point, I had already created my new virtual machine and then powered it down. Okay. So I bring up my helper machine, okay, and I do the clone. The file copy actually goes over an IP network. So I said before, this is the most time-consuming part. It really is. Okay. And when you bring up the drive, you have an option of doing just the operating system partition if you have multiple partitions, or you can do them all. It's probably easier to just do the operating system partition and make sure that you can get it reconfigured and booted up. And then you can copy the data over any way you want. I mean, if it's a Windows box, you can set up a shared drive and just copy it over the IP network once the original machine comes up in a virtual machine. Okay, there's no sense to wait to copy 20 or 30 gigs of data just to see if you can reach in and get it reconfigured and have it boot up. So just do the operating system first and then worry about the data later. Okay, so you bring up the helper machine. It's going to ask you, what do you want to do? You want to perform a system reconfiguration or clone a source computer's drive? And obviously the first thing you do is clone the drive, so that's the second choice. If somebody didn't go to the interface class. Okay. So you're going to say, okay, I want to clone it. That's when this little box comes up that says, hey, you know, we really haven't tested this with a whole lot of hardware, and if you have any issues with the hardware being recognized or working, you might want to consider a third-party imaging or backup restore product. Okay, so we've already done that disclaimer. Okay, and then you need to type in the IP address that your other boot CD gave you when you got to that screen. Okay, and the port number is in here already. You can change this, but since you're doing the copy over IP, you're probably not going through a daisy chain of routers. So you probably shouldn't have to do anything with the port numbers unless you've got an application that's using port 7000 for something. Okay, then it's going to show you the drive that you have that it recognizes, okay, or more than one. If there's more than one, you need to select the one that you want to do this time. Okay, then it's going to show you all of the volumes that it found. It's going to mount the drive and it's going to show you all the volumes that it found. There's also another screen that I think I forgot to do a screenshot of somewhere between here and the next one where it's going to ask you which of these partitions you want to copy. And you're going to, there's a third column over on the right where you can type in no. Be aware that if you tell it not to copy the partition, it still creates one at the destination. It just doesn't copy the contents. Okay? So while you're doing this, if you've got a Windows box with a fairly big drive and you've got applications and data and operating system all on the same drive, it might be a good time to think about moving that data off to another drive. Put it in a different virtual disk and put it out somewhere on your storage area network with maybe different RAID level characteristics or maybe better I/O. Okay? So it might be a good time to do that. But if you say no, don't copy the partitions here, it's still going to create them at the destination. It's just not going to copy the stuff over. Okay? You can also resize the partitions, but you can't resize the drive. Okay, when you do it this way. Okay, so then you're going to clone it. You're going to select, just clone the drive, don't modify it. You could say do everything at once, but there's a very good financial reason for not doing this. The license for this product is consumed when you reconfigure, not when you copy. So you can copy all day, as much stuff as you want, and there's no license involved. Once you tell this thing, reach into that virtual disk and do a reconfiguration, that's when you consume the license. So to my mind, it makes sense to, let's just do the copy, let's boot the thing up, let's make sure we get that blue screen and that it says at the top, inaccessible boot device. Because then I've got a real good shot of when I reach in to reconfigure it, it's going to work. Why waste a license on something that you're not sure if it's going to work or not yet? Okay. Right, so again, there's our blue screen. We're actually happy we got the blue screen. It says right at the top, inaccessible boot device. Okay? If you're doing this stuff in a hurry and you get sidetracked and you go off to put out a fire somewhere and you come back and you see this, that's basically a good clue that you've probably not reconfigured this virtual disk yet. Okay? Okay, so then you're going to fire up, you're going to go back to the helper machine, okay, and say, well, where do I want to put this copy? And in my case, in this one, I don't actually have it here, but I was doing this from a virtual machine. So I actually, when I shut down the original virtual machine that I made that's going to be the new one, I reconnected the virtual disk, I copied it, connected it to my helper virtual machine. So when I bring up the helper virtual machine, it thinks that second VMDK file is a local drive. So I use the direct to disk here, and I just tell it use the second drive. If I was using a physical helper machine, I would tell it, make me a new VMDK and put it in there. But be aware, if you're going to do that, that this product is going to make you an old VMFS2 ESX2 type virtual machine. And then if you go to move that onto an ESX3 server, there's some extra steps you're going to have to do. If you just go ahead and create the thing in a virtual machine and then use this to do direct to disk, you don't have to do that if you created the virtual machine on ESX3. Okay? Alright. So this is actually a screenshot. The other button should be checked here. After I'm done making the copy, I reach in I shut it down. I power up the new virtual machine. I get my blue screen. Then I power down the new virtual machine again. I power up the helper machine again. And I come in here and I select the other choice. I tell it perform a system reconfiguration. And I tell it to use the second drive. And it'll actually go in and do that. And then it's going to ask me, what do you want to use as a destination? And this is the latest version of the product. It was when I did this about a month and a half ago. I downloaded it like 2 days before I did these slides. So it actually has ESX3 here as a destination. Okay, so it'll reach in and it'll reconfigure it. And what that really does for you is it tells it which device drivers to use, which version of the virtual hardware device driver to use. So it'll just reach in there and put in the right driver, so you don't have to worry about that. Okay, and again, we can use this to do workstation or GSX server or the other versions of ESX server as well. Okay, the last thing you're going to do is pretty much the manual part of the process. You're going to boot the thing up. It's going to detect new hardware. Going to say, oh, wait, let me go get the driver for you and do this little Windows thing. And then you're going to need to go in and remove any unneeded drivers or services. You also want to make sure that you get, VMware tools installed. Okay, because there is actually no downside to installing VMware tools. So pretty much any guest operating system that you have VMware tools for, you want to install it in the virtual machine as one of the very first things you do. Okay, so we install VMware tools. We remove any old hardware drivers if you've got fiber channel drivers. Any software for maybe any uninterruptible power supplies, power chute, things like that, you're going to not need those in the virtual machine. So you're going to want to go in and remove those. Okay, you will probably want to go in and remove the old network card, which in Windows is a true joy. You've got to go in and do that. Show non-present devices equals zero and then bring up the management console and say show hidden devices. Because otherwise, what does Windows do? It hides the old card. It gives you a new one. It makes the new one DHCP. And when you try and give it the static address the old one has, it says, hey, you know, there's a card that already has that, but you can't see it because it's hidden. Okay. It knows better than you do what you want to do, so you just have to learn to deal with it. Okay, and then we're going to install VMware Tools. That's going to give us all the good stuff that VMware Tools gives us. Gives us a better video driver, gives us an optimized mouse, okay, the network card driver for the VMXNet virtual network card, SCSI drivers, the memory management stuff so that if you're putting this on an ESX platform, it allows ESX to do all its really cool stuff with management with the balloon drivers and stuff. Okay. Then you're going to test and check for any errors, run it. You may need to also go in and performance tune the virtual machine for resource usage if you're putting it on ESX. On the other platforms, you don't have some of the things that you do on ESX for the resource utilization, okay, with limits and reservations and shares and all of that good stuff. Okay, and then you also might want to make sure that you go in and check the event logs, because there may have been something that happened that you didn't notice. Okay, and the event logs will generally give you a little bit of help with that. Okay, some things you might want to note. Again, the most time-consuming thing here is the file copy. So I generally don't copy data drives. I go ahead and deal with those later. There's no sense in waiting for a 10 or 20 gig drive to copy over just to find out if you can turn the thing on. Because then if the operating system or the boot sector didn't come over correctly, you're going to have to do it again anyway. Why waste the time waiting? Hey, don't include your proprietary vendor partitions. A lot of these guys put these little hidden partitions on there with utilities and stuff in them. They're not going to work. Again, you might want to take this opportunity to move non-operating system partitions to their own drives, separate virtual disks. Might make sense to do that. Okay, adjust the resource settings. Make sure you create all your virtual disks as SCSI. ESX doesn't support IDE in a virtual machine, so then even if you're not putting stuff directly onto ESX, you may want to move it to ESX later, and that'll save you a lot of grief. Okay, the helper virtual machine should also use SCSI then, so that it can access the drives and deal with the stuff easily. When you're doing this, do not connect the CD until after you get all your data drives moved over. Because if you bring up Windows, it's going to grab that drive letter for that CD, and then when you go and start making new data drives, you're going to have to go in and manually reassign the drive letters through the disk manager, and that may be an issue for you. Okay. And if you're using a helper virtual machine, you can actually have the clone drive connected to both of them at the same time. You just can only power on one at a time. If you're using a physical machine, you've got to mess with power cables and data cables and all that good fun stuff. Okay. Okay, again, the cloning always creates partitions, so if you tell it no, it doesn't copy the data, but it still creates them. So if you're not going to use them and you're going to move some of that stuff, you might want to tell it no, don't copy it, but at the same time, resize it, okay, because it will allow you to change the sizes. If you're doing Citrix servers, Windows in a new environment may go in and look at the drive letters and reassign them for you. So you may have to go out and straighten out your Citrix drive letter assignments and things. That's an issue. This tool will clone a 64-bit operating system, but it will not reach in and reconfigure it. Okay, so that's not going to happen. Okay, and make sure you check the knowledge base and the forums and the documentation for problems, files. We know that we have a problem with PC Anywhere. It does some funny stuff with the video. So if you clone a machine that has PC Anywhere in it and then you go and install VMware tools and you change it to the high-resolution video driver, it just reverts back to standard VGA because of the way that PC Anywhere and Windows work together to do the video stuff for the remote access. So you might want to uninstall PC Anywhere, do the clone, install VMware tools, and then go ahead and reinstall PC Anywhere. And there may be other ones out there that do that. Pretty much anything that tries to hook into the hardware might give you grief. So check the forums and check the knowledge base, especially the forums. There's very few problems that you're going to have. This product's been out for a while that somebody else hasn't seen at least once. And then if they fixed it, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. And if they haven't fixed it, you know that there's a lot of people out there working on it, and maybe you might want to reconsider putting that machine into a virtual machine until you find out what's going on with it. Okay, we also have Virtual Machine Importer, which is downloadable, and if you install the latest version of VMware Workstation, 5.5.2 I think it is, on Windows, it already has the importer in it. Okay, and importer will allow you to reach out and grab virtual PC and virtual server, virtual machines. It will allow you to go out and grab Symantec backup exec system recovery images and just import them directly into virtual machines. It also is a really easy way, well, an easier way than manually moving your virtual machines from one VMware product to another. Okay? So you can do that also with Virtual Machine Importer. Again, it's free. You can download it. Or if you've got Workstation 5.5.0 and higher, I think. I know it's in 5.5.2, but I think it's in 5.5 and up. You already have it. Okay? I don't believe it will, no. I don't believe it will. Okay? And that's where you can get it from. If you don't have Workstation and you want to download it, you can get it from there. And the next generation, P2V, they actually have a new product that's coming out that's called VMware Converter. And it's going to combine the functions of the P2VA and Virtual Machine Importer. It's also going to have some new stuff like remote cloning, hot cloning, so you don't have to power down the machine that you're making a migration with. If you want to know more about that, originally they scheduled, the gentleman that's doing that is Pang Chen, and he's a real sharp guy, and he's doing that session right after this down in room, I think, 515. Okay, and the original deal was, is I was going to urge people to run from here to his next, but from what I understand, that session is fairly full. So if you're interested in this, you might want to run down there and see if you can get in. Right now it's in beta, and I think you can download some of the stuff. He would know more about it than I do. But that's going to be right after this one. Okay. There's also a lab. There's some self-paced labs down there that use Importer. But from what I understand, the labs are pretty much pre-booked as well. They're pretty much booked to capacity. But you might be able to get standby on that if you want. The documentation website, the specific forum ID is 73 for this product. A lot of good stuff out there. And again, the session after this down the hall a bit is Pang Chen. Okay, and that's pretty much the future of P2V. New features in the new product. Okay, yes?
Is there a time frame for that?
I don't believe it's been announced. It's in beta. There's going to be two versions. There's going to be, and I don't even know if the names are standardized yet, but there's pretty much a Joe Lunchbucket one and a Cadillac version. Okay, and those are not official names, by the way. You can download the Joe Lunchbucket one and test it, but it doesn't have all the advanced features. And I believe they're in closed beta with some of the premier partners. Testing the other one, okay? But I don't believe they've officially announced a release date for it, so I honestly don't know. Yes, sir? I don't know. I believe in the new one, the boot disk is based on Windows PE rather than Nofix. Because, again, the product only really supports Windows. I don't know. You might want to try and get a hold of Pang and ask him what's going on. I don't know, because I haven't really played with this. I haven't seen it. I've seen some screenshots, and I haven't really spoken to anybody about that.
Pang, did you want to say something? Go ahead.
Linux is not in the next
order. Okay. Okay. All right. And on that note, I'm going to turn this over to my capable partner in crime here and let him do his piece for you.
Oh, thanks, Joe. I guess I've been working with a P2B product for about, for a while, 2.5 years, something like that. And I've seen a change over time, and we've had hiccups with it. And I guess anybody who's ever worked with it has probably had a hiccup with it a time or two. But the great thing I've always liked about it was it, if we were really doing a server consolidation project, then this product gave us the capability to do it much more quickly than we could have. Now, I've had clients, and they'll go, well, Brian, I'm just going to install Clean. I don't have a problem with that. If that's what a customer wants to do, that's what we'll do. We'll install the brand new server into a virtual machine Clean, but as Joe alluded to earlier, what if you've got one of these applications that's pretty finicky? Or you've got an application that was written for a specific purpose and that person's no longer with you. And so really converting it into a virtual machine is the best way to go. We had a client that we worked with about a couple of years ago. They used this product at that time. He probably converted 20, 25 virtual machines in a weekend. And it worked really well for him, and he was very jazzed about it. And when they came in the next day, a lot of his users, they didn't even know they were running in virtual machines. And the key to this is that the virtual machine is presenting itself to the users as if it were the same machine that they were used to using last week. That's what you want. Now, I know I'm going to make one statement here. I've always had a funny little saying about users. Users are the enemy. And a lot of times, a user is going to come to you and they're going to say, well, I don't think I really want this in a virtual machine. Well, he went ahead and virtualized 20 virtual machines that came in the next day. They didn't know. And by the time they get to using it, they really don't care. As long as it provides the services that they need, what do you care, really? Besides, from our point of view, it saves us a lot of money. You guys have been hearing the mantra over and over again this weekend, how VMware can really provide so much. Now, when you start to use this product, what could go wrong? And there are some things that from time to time may crop up in your deployments. So what we're looking at here are some hardware issues. You may find that your particular group or setup is not supported. It may not be supported. We've had an HCL or something like it for the P2B product for quite some time. Please check it and double check to make sure that the hardware that you're trying to convert is potentially a good candidate. At worst, if we can't boot it off the CD and image it, what could you do? If we can't use our CD to image it, what could you do instead? You can use your product to do it. You can use Ghost, Alteryx, Acronis. There's a number of good products that could image that server for you. And as Joe mentioned in his part of the presentation, once we've got the image, then the P2B assistant can take over and reconfigure it for you. That's what you're paying for. So hardware issues every now and then will come up. Imaging issues from time to time. In the clients that I've worked with, we will try to image a server. And it may be an old server, especially NT boxes. I've run across this, where we try to take an image of it, and especially in the older P2B product, the imaging process itself would just hang. So it could be a bad block or something's just not right in the file system, and when we try to do that file-level image, it's just unable to do so. So every now and then you might run into an imaging issue, but a lot of this has been worked out. I've been really pleased with the newest product. Reconfiguration issues. Every now and then, you might run into a reconfiguration issue. We're going to take a look at that in more detail and other types of troubleshooting as we go through this. Preferred process using the VMware tools. We're going to cover this. I've got a process that I just use over and over again. It works the vast majority of the time if you'll be patient. I always tell people, IT people have to be really patient most of the time. When does something always work the way you expect it? It doesn't happen very often. So be patient with the process. If you'll be patient, become confident in the process, especially if it's brand new. Do it a couple of times. Get confident in it. Understand what you're doing. The others will come much more quickly. And then lastly, we'll talk a little bit similar to what Joe just covered on the resources that are available out there. Now, what are some of the hardware issues that you might run into? Well, what is the physical machine's hardware makeup? One of the things our clients do not do a very good job of when they're on their own sometimes is they really don't have good documentation about the server. And I'll give you a good example. I was in Cedar Rapids doing helping out a client, and Brian, we've got this server. We've always wanted a P2B. Why? Well, it's running Windows NT and some other things. I said, well, great. Windows NT is one of those boxes we love to do for clients because it's a good cleanup process that we have to go through on an NT box, and we want to show them how that should work. Well, they didn't tell me anything about it. They just said, let's P2V this box. We P2V'd. It took about an hour and a half to get everything copied, everything over. Go to boot it up. It boots. Everything looked good. Did a system reconfiguration. Everything seemed to go okay. But then when we tried to connect to the network, it wouldn't work. I said, well, how was this box configured? Well, it's standard box. Well, what's standard for here? Well, and then he paused. I always hate that. When a client pauses, you know they just thought of something about that server that they didn't tell you. Token ring. Had a token ring card in it. It just, you know, if I had known, we would have never done that box. But he didn't tell me. So document your hardware. Try to find out what is on that box. I always tell clients, you know, if at all possible, we don't really want any funky weirdness on a box. You know, some card that, you know, is maybe a one of a kind or does something really special. That's not going to make a good candidate. And also try to find boxes, obviously, if you can, that support good SCSI adapters, I.O. controllers, things of that nature. Is it ACPI compliant? I run into that every now and then. Older boxes, but you run into it every now and then. Token ring serial boards. Some of you guys have boxes that modem out all the time. They're checking or pulling in with other servers. They've got these serial cards with eight serial ports or more on them. Probably not a good candidate as far as that board goes anyway. Are any printers connected to that server? Not too often do we run into this. Might be. Again, document it. Just make sure that you know what you're getting yourself into. Does the physical server use software RAID? I've only had two clients probably in the last 3 years that uses Microsoft software RAID. But that doesn't mean it's not out there. Every now and then you'll see it. So check for that. If it's got software RAID, it's not a good candidate, at least from our standpoint. When was the last known backup? Well, Brian, I don't know. You know, we have a backup routine. We should have got it last Sunday. Have you checked? Well, no. I said, well, let's go check. Have you done a restore of that backup lately? Do you know it's a good backup? Well, no, we haven't really done that in a while. It's probably not a good candidate right now. If you don't know you have a good backup, at least get one. You know, especially on the old boxes. Joe, again, mentions these NT boxes. They're really old. I mean, you've got everything crossed hoping this box never goes down. Because if it does, you can't get any hardware for it anymore. Do you have a good backup of it? I mean, that would be a good start. And then, any weirdness. I'm a big fan of no weirdness, and this is just in the P2V. I just don't like any weirdness on my box. We've mentioned a couple. Imaging issues, licensing and the boot CD. P2V licensing, we've always had, or not always, but here in the last year or so, we've had two different licenses that you can purchase. How many of you have actually used the eval license? A couple of you? Okay. I was glad when that came out because it gave you a chance to try out the product and see how it was going to work, and then you can convert it either into, I think, what was it, the 25-use license or the unlimited version. And as Joe was really nice to point out, I tell you what, you don't want to eat up your licenses doing these copy operations. Double-check to make sure that disk will boot first before you actually do the reconfigure. That's priceless. Now, does that take extra time? Yeah. It does. But wouldn't you rather put in the extra time to make sure that that box is going to do what you want it to do without eating up a license? And I think that's great information. But you learn that. You know, you first get started, you don't think about it, but you learn this. The P2V boot CD. Physical machine does not boot. Now, I've run into this just me personally. I've downloaded it to my laptop. I get to the client site, and I want to burn it once I get to the client site. So I burn the CD. We put it in the server. It's not booting. Come to find out, my CD-ROM on my laptop, for whatever reason, burning that CD, it just wouldn't come up correctly. What could it be? Well, it could be my CD-ROM, or when I downloaded it, it's very possible the image just came down corrupted. It's very possible. So now I always run an MD5 checksum. If you go to VMware's download site, have most of you noticed there's MD5 sums there, and that's so that you can check this stuff. Some of these ISOs are fairly large. You want to double-check that, make sure this machine's going to boot, at the very least. Imaging issues, networking. Now, folks, don't try to do these images across routers. Okay? Always try to be as close as you can to the server that you're imaging. I've had clients literally hook a laptop up with a crossover cable to their server. They wanted the quickest imaging they could get. Now, that's not what I do, but I've had customers that have done that. But it's that way. At least try to be on the same switch. You know, wouldn't that be nice? You know, try to have be on the same switch if at all possible. It just speeds things along if at all possible. Is DHCP working? You boot off the CD, you get that nice little screen that it presents to you that says this is the IP address of your server. Well, is the server on a network where you're presenting DHCP? Are you going to have to give it a static IP? That's possible. To be quite honest, I've used both methods. I really don't care one way or the other. It's just as long as it can be up on the network. What have I done in the past? Maybe you wouldn't be surprised. I know somebody has some pretty old boxes. They've got these old cards in them, and sometimes they're just stuff nobody has a driver for. We may not even have a driver for it on this Nopix distribution. What I used to do is I always carried an Intel 100 card with me. When I showed up on site, I had it in my nice little cellophane, you know, anti-static bag, and if the customer, we couldn't recognize it with the boot CD, we popped this Intel card in there because I knew it worked. So if you've got one of these cards laying around, or if you've got a box you've already P2V'd and it already had an Intel card in it, or some brand that works, have one just handy. What's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to take an extra 5 minutes, you're going to have to open the box up, put that card in there, hook it up to the network, and now you'll know you'll have a good networking card. What you don't want to have is fumble around for an hour, 2 hours, trying to figure out why it's not coming up on the network, why is it not auto-negotiating correctly, all these things. It's just a pain in the butt is what it is, and it just slows you down. Disconnect. I always disconnect every single NIC on that box but the one I want to use. That way there's just no ambiguity as far as which card I want to use. And then obviously what's the NIC speed and duplex. Now this has changed with the product over time as far as what command you can use here. But you can force the speed and duplex. Every now and then you guys have some older switches that it just doesn't auto-negotiate well. Or our product when it boots tries to auto-negotiate and it just doesn't work well with the switch. You can utilize the sudo command here with the new Nopix distribution to actually set the speed and duplex. And this will allow you to hopefully get a good image much quicker. I had a lot of hands go up. How many of you have tried to do an image at half duplex by just inadvertently? How fast was that image?
Long time.
Yeah, you know, it's like, well, I'll go home for the weekend. I mean, it's a long time. Imaging issues, storage. The P2V boot CD doesn't see all your volumes. We run into this sometimes with software RAID issues because they're trying to use different drives, but they're doing it at the Windows level for the RAID, so we won't see all the volumes appropriately. Are there any volumes hanging off secondary controllers? Yeah, I've had clients. They've bought these really esoteric SCSI controller because it was in PC Magazine back in the day, and it was supposed to give them great performance. It probably did back in the day, but when we go to try to image these products, guess what? We don't have a driver for that card. So it's one of these secondary controllers where it's just not really that standard, in which case, again, you may want to use a different product to do the image. Use the hardware support customizer. This is a way, anyway, to try to customize your driver usage. To be quite honest, I haven't used this a whole lot, but it is available. Again, probably going through the knowledge base of the forums, you can figure out how to use it. Does the physical server use software RAID? And we've talked about this. If it does, P2V is probably not going to see all the data. It's not going to see all the data. You're probably better off using some other product that can reach into the box while it's on and take an image because it's mounted properly under the OS and it's doing the RAID under Windows 2000, in most cases 2003, possibly even NT. Operating system, document. Gosh, I showed up at a bank. We were trying to do a P2V, and it was just a standard Windows 2000 box. When was the last time you logged into this box? Now, I'm asking this question because they just tried 10 times to log into the box. Well, we hardly ever get into this box. I mean, it performs a function, and believe me, it's a great box to P2V because it wasn't busy. But whatever function it was doing, you know, it did it. They never had to log into that box. We tried to log into it. They didn't even know what the password was. Well, I mean, it's funny, but at the same time, good documentation should help us out here. Document that operating system version. NT helper, you always use an NT helper VM for NT cloning. Joe did a really good job of showing you that the different helpers, NT in particular, is very critical. Make sure your helper VM is at least greater than or equal to for cloning. I usually use a Windows 2003 helper. I usually have a 2003 helper, and then if they've got any NT, we build an NT helper. So remember, these are just virtual machines. Those of you that have done P2Vs before, they're just virtual machines. You build them with the operating system that will, in most cases, be successful when you're trying to do your reconfigs and so forth. And they're just virtual machines. What's that password?
Another problem that we run into every now and then is we just don't check the event viewer very much. Some servers, they've done their job. You expect everything to be working great. But you don't check the event logs before you do the clone. Every time. We want to document what's in that event viewer. Why? Because there may be some little nitpicky issue in there that you really haven't been paying attention to. And when we P2V it, guess what? It's going to have a nitpicky issue after you P2V it. So we want to clean out those logs. We want to try to fix anything that it's giving us and then clear those logs so that when we do the P2V, we've got a brand new set of logs. And when we, after we've done the P2V, the reconfiguration and so forth, when we go back to the logs, what should be in there? Only those things that are giving us heartburn now, not something that we inherited before we did the clone. That's always helpful. Any hardware-specific services, and again, Joe alluded to this, we run into this a lot on the major vendor, hardware vendors, IBM, Dell, and HP Compaq. They've got a lot of these services that run because you're running on their hardware. In many cases, these can be disabled in the last phase of your cleanup. You don't have to uninstall these. Now, the nice thing that you can do if you want to take the time and the effort is to take a snapshot. If everything boots up okay and everything's great about your virtual machine, take a snapshot. Now you know you've got it works at this point. And then as you do your cleanup, if you break something, you can just revert back. So it's, tell you what, folks, this virtual machine stuff works, doesn't it? Is there a utility partition? Delete that partition on the virtual machine after you've imaged it because you're not going to need it. Smart Start and some of that other stuff that gets put on these physical servers, just not necessary for us. You may have to edit the boot INI. Why? What partition is the boot INI looking at if it's got a utility partition sometimes? Yep, could be looking at two. Sometimes, for whatever reason, it could be looking at one, and that was the utility partition. You just blew it away, didn't you? If it's not looking at the utility partition, it's looking at two, but you just blew away the utility partition. Where is it looking? Well, now it's looking at two, but is two your active partition? Well, may not be. It's just stuff you work through. On some servers. It's not a reoccurring event sometimes, but it's just one of those things you learn. Absolutely. Imaging issues, the installed applications. I don't run into this a lot, but I would imagine we'd have a few people. How many of you have applications that license themselves to a MAC address? Yep, see? It's not a bunch, but they're out there. And you P2V that server, Joe just told you about the only thing that changes from physical to virtual is the HPA, isn't it? Well, guess what else changes? MAC's changing. So the MAC just changed. Nothing else really changes, just the MAC address. But if that application was tied to the old physical MAC address, could break the application or prevent it from running at least. So set the MAC address in the guest OS. Since we're doing Windows VMs, in most cases you can actually go into the properties for the network card and you can actually spoof the MAC address up in the OS. It's not a hard technique. It's just something you can do. Now, I will say this. This fix may not work correctly now. When we had 2.5, it was something that we could do. We really didn't think anything about it. But in this version of VI3, with the newer default virtual switch port group settings, MAC spoofing is rejected. Or is it accepted? I always forget that one. But anyway, it's in there. So you may need to double check this just to make sure that what you're trying to change inside the guest OS is going to work once it hits the virtual switch. Because these virtual switches now have definable security policies. MAC changes or MAC spoofing are one of those. Uninstall PC Anywhere once you get your image. And I've run into this. Same client in Cedar Rapids, as a matter of fact. They had a number of PCs that had PC Anywhere. That was just their remote connectivity option because they had folks in New Jersey that actually connected to the servers in Cedar Rapids. They used PC Anywhere to do that. Not my favorite product, but it's out there. It does what it's supposed to do in most cases. But we need to get rid of this thing after we've taken the image because your VMware tools will not behave correctly while it's there. How many of you have run into that? It's actually fairly common. All right. Citrix, make note of the map drives. Make note of the map drives when you're trying to do a Citrix physical to virtual conversion. Because every now and then, actually about half the time it seems, your P and Q drives get remapped. And it's just a normal behavior of the reconfiguration. Your P and Q drives may get remapped to something much lower in the alphabet. There's actually a couple of good white papers out there. Mike Laverick has a good white paper on how to handle Citrix VMs when you're doing P2Vs. No problem there. Third-party tools, why not use the imaging software you already have? Now, when I used to, when I go to do P2Vs, we want them to use the boot CD because for some of their servers, that may actually be the best product to do the imaging.
But if they've already built and have an infrastructure that uses somebody else's product, then we always use that as well, because I want them to see both. So if you've already got a third-party imaging product, like those that we mentioned earlier, use them. What did you purchase with the P2V product? An imaging or a reconfiguration product? Reconfiguration is what you're at for here. Getting the image, that's up to you. So if you've already got this infrastructure in place, use it. Now, there are some caveats, and again, the user forms and the knowledge base will go into different versions. Some of the older versions will have some issues, especially on the ghost side. But, you know, you'll hopefully have your hands on a version that'll work just fine. If the image has already been taken, you can use the virtual machine importer that Joe talked about. And I've got a PDF in here as far as the manual for that for compatibility. Use a BART PE CD. There's actually some really good information out there on how to build your own CD. And I'd say somebody in here has done it. It's not too terribly difficult, but the neat thing about the BART PE CD is that you can put whatever drivers you want on it. And if you know your hardware better than we do, so sometimes building that BART PE CD is the greatest way to get that server up on the network so you can take an image of it. One of the things I try to teach my clients, there's lots of options here. What we don't want you to think is that, well, you know, the CD didn't work. This sucks. No, it really isn't that at all. It's just that maybe that particular combination is not going to work for you. There are lots of different ways to handle some of this. Reconfiguration issues. Most likely problem is that utility partition gets in the way. And this is easily worked around. Once you've done this a couple of times, it's not going to be a big deal. Some of you have already done it, so it's not terribly it's not something that will be a showstopper. Try not to image the utility partition if possible. Delete it with disk administrator or fdisk on the image, not on the physical server. Don't delete it on the physical server. Edit the boot INI file if necessary. In many cases, that's going to be the case. I remember when I started doing my first few boot P2Vs, we had a lot of older compact hardware. Now, I'm not picking on compact. It's just that they always had that utility partition. And we just always had to remember, go back into the boot INI and make that adjustment. May have to set the partition to active. May have to set that partition to active. Don't run the P2V assistant with terminal services session. I never show a customer to ever do that. I guess some customers really, I would say the most painful exercise for an IT administrator is they're at their desk sitting, and when they have to get up, that's the most painful motion an IT administrator has to do. You know, there is a little bit of physicality if you're going to use our product to do the imaging. Now, if you're using some of the agentless type, well, I guess they all have an agent, the ones that I've used, but if you use something other than our product to do the image, maybe you don't have to get up. But it's probably going to require a little physicality if you're going to use our boot CD. Always start with clean installations of helper VMs. For instance, I made the bad mistake, because I didn't know any better. That's how you learn sometimes. And I had a helper VM on my laptop, and I also installed some other VMware applications. Just different things, importers, stuff like that. Well, all of a sudden, there were some DLLs that those files used that were different versions, and all of a sudden, my P2Vs wouldn't work anymore. So always use clean helper VMs. They don't need anything special. All you want is a nice, clean 2003 helper VM, nice, clean NT helper VM. Put just the bare minimum P2V assistant in there. Should be good to go. If you really think you've got to put antivirus and all that other stuff, I would probably rethink about how I'm hooking it into the network. Try to isolate the computers that you're doing your P2Vs, and that way you don't have to really add anything to your P2V helper. But don't install it in something that you already got some other application running. Always try to keep it as clean as possible. Reconfiguration, as far as VM booting, the virtual disk reconfigured. Joe covered this in some detail already, so I won't cover that here. After the image was taken, was the target VM powered on? Did you get a blue screen? And again, some people, they try to do both steps because they're trying to save time. I would argue against it. I'm a real patient person when it comes to these P2Vs. It may add 5-10 minutes to my process, but to me, if I know I've tried this step, did you get a blue screen, then I know that I should be able to reconfigure it successfully. Joe is exactly right. Why go through the whole process of cloning the OS and the data just to find out you didn't get it? And it takes however long it takes to get the image. Boot INI pointed to the wrong partition number. For Windows 2003 VMs, use that LSI logic driver. I hope everybody knows this at this point. Which operating systems use LSI, folks? 2003. And I haven't talked to anybody at VMware lately, but I would imagine Vista is too. I don't know that for sure. But everything else, bus logic. Matter of fact, the new products today, both P2V and Virtual Center, when they notice a mismatch between the adapter you're using and the way it was configured, it's going to want to reconfigure it for you when you try to boot it up. This is new. It used to be you're going to get a nice blue screen and you would have to go and change the virtual hardware. Now it's going to warn you and it's going to want to do the reconfiguration for you if you have a mismatch between the operating system and which adapter you're trying to use. So that's a nice feature. They built that into the interface, and I think it's going to save you a little bit of grief. Other troubleshooting display issues. We've talked about PC Anywhere. Anybody use SMS? The remote control feature of SMS? All right. I haven't run into any issues with it, but again, I try to, once I get the image, I try to uninstall any remote control software other than in Windows 2003 VMs. Of course, we have remote desktop. I usually leave that there, or terminal services that's native to 2000, but I'm just paranoid when I do these images. I just don't like any other remote software on there. PC Anywhere is the most egregious example. I think most of us, or many of us, have run into that. Erratic mouse. Make sure your hardware acceleration is turned on 2003 VMs. When you install the tools, it's going to say, do you want to reconfigure the display now? And part of that is to move that hardware acceleration slider all the way to the right. This is in the properties for your display. Do that. I mean, you always get in the habit of going ahead and do that. But uninitiated folks, people that are brand new, sometimes they just forget. And all of a sudden, they go into the remote console, the mouse is lousy. Oh, man, this sucks. You know, that's her favorite word, sucks. IT people, it sucks. No, it's not that. It's just that you haven't quite done everything you need to do. Network connectivity in Windows NT, you will have to uninstall the old NIC and manually install that AMD NIC, especially when we were talking about 2.5. If physical system was brought back online, make sure the VM is on a separate complete network. And what's one of the great things about ESX servers? They have internal only switches, don't they? When you bring up that virtual machine for the first time, you may get a couple of errors because it can't talk to the domain controller, but bring it up on an internal-only switch and make sure everything else is working for you. You don't need to put it on the network right away. In most cases, you need to build into your plan a little bit of time to boot it up on a isolated network. I always call internal-only switches when I teach quarantine switches because I want to keep them away from stuff until I'm exactly sure it's going to do what I expect it to do. Physical system brought back online, separate network. IP address already used. Joe already talked about this. This could be at one of those hidden devices. You need to go into the system applet and show hidden devices and remove that card manually in many cases. So, VM will not shut down. In Windows NT, it's just not supported. Windows 2000, you can use a configuration file attribute, a VMX file attribute called GUI exit on CLI halt. Equal to true. This is something that you may have to use with Windows 2000. This is on non-ACPI systems, and I hope you don't run into too many of those. Again, I don't run into that many of them, but they're out there. 2003, when shutting down from Virtual Center, sometimes that default lockout screensaver will keep it from shutting down, especially in the old Virtual Center. So what it is you try to shut it down in Virtual Center, and it says stopping. It'll be there for 5, 15 minutes. You can go get a cup of coffee. It still won't be shut down. You go into the virtual machine directly. And by the way, in the old virtual center, you couldn't even open a remote console to it once it said started stopping. So you'd have to use RDP or some other. It's not even trying to shut down. It's because the lockout screensaver is preventing you from doing it. The virtual center couldn't log into it and shut it down. Check your event logs. Please, please, please check your event logs. Clean up those unused services. You're going to see, many cases, lots of errors that first time it boots up. So go through the event logs and make sure you start cleaning them up. It's going to give you nice little logs there that says, well, that didn't work, and that's not working, and that's not working. Very easy to clean up when you use your logs. Clear them out when you're done. Boot it again. Check your logs. It's an iterative process till you get everybody happy. Preferred process. This is what I do. This is what I mentioned earlier in the presentation. Create a P2V helper. You may need to. 2003 and NT. It just depends on what you're trying to accomplish. And that have access to the same storage as where your VMs are going to be typically imaged. And that way they're on the same LUNs that you've masked or zoned for that particular, for the ESX servers ultimately. And then shut down after creation. Once you have the helpers built, you're going to keep them powered off at least initially. Then you're going to create a target VM. Joe mentioned this. I'm a big stickler here. Create, especially now, create the virtual machine now. What is going to happen is that in VI3 in particular, and I think most of you, again, are aware of this, we now have a directory structure in VMFS3, don't we? So now that all the files are on the VMFS3 directory, if you'll go ahead and create the virtual machine, size the drives that you need, especially the one OS drive appropriately, then we can connect to it with the P2V helper, but it's already in the directory that it needs to be in. If you'll create the virtual machine ahead of time, that's already, the groundwork's already laid. Create your target VM, power it off after you've created that. So now nothing's on. Boot the physical machine. You're going to use your boot CD, part PE, or our boot CD to get it on the network. Reconfigure the P2V helper to use the target VM's virtual disk. And as Joe also mentioned, this is going to usually be the D drive for the P2V helper. The P2V helper has its own operating system plus the P2V assistant installed. You attach it to the same disk that your new virtual machine will use to boot from. Reconfigure the P2V helper. Power on the P2V helper. Image the physical server. Shut down the P2V helper. Power on the target VM. And hopefully, you'll get a blue screen. All right? You probably will. Shut down the target VM once you've got your blue screen. Power on the P2V helper VM. Reconfigure that second drive on the P2V helper. It's pretty straightforward at this point. Once it's done with the reconfiguration, shut it down. Reconfigure the P2V helper so that it no longer is able to look at that drive anymore. We don't want it inadvertently trying to attach to that drive. If everything went well, then we've got a brand new virtual machine that's going to be booting up, and it's going to be using it exclusively. Power on that new target VM, and then start your cleanup. If it's Windows NT, you got some cleanup. If you've got Windows 2000, you got a little bit of cleanup, but NT is a little bit more work. Here are the resources, folks, and I don't know how many times going to the forums has saved me. And I am not above criticism or going up to a client and saying, I don't know that one. I just don't know. You can't see everything, folks. It's just not possible. So get involved. If you don't have a user ID, get one. I always teach this, too. If you don't have a user ID, get on the forums, create one, and get involved. You would be amazed at how much help you'll get. And it's free. What else? We got the documents as well to support the product. And, of course, those always come in handy because sometimes conceptually our customers have a hard time understanding the process. Questions? Yes?
Any issues when you have your swap file on separate partitions?
It can be, but a lot of times what we'll do is we don't want to image it if we can help it. Every now and then. If we find that the page file is on a different drive, I think is what you meant to say, then what we'll try to do is get the physical machine at a point where we delete that page file before we take the image. And then it'll recreate it on the way back up. And you can separate it again into two different VMDKs if you really think it's necessary, but usually in a VM we don't. Anybody else? Yeah?
Can I uninstall PC Anywhere, install the VMware tools, reinstall PC Anywhere?
Good.
Why would you want to?
That's the only thing our folks in operations want to use.
That's all they want to use.
Yeah, we want to give them virtual center necessarily.
Web access.
Can they use the web tool?
Yeah.
We're starting to push the web tool with these ops folks because they don't have to install any client. We can supply the URL from the generator and just email it to them. I'm just not a
give
big
them web
fan of
access
anywhere.
To it, and then all they'll see is virtual machine stuff. They won't see any of the other stuff they would in the VI client.
Yes, sir. I just give them web access.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Yeah. Yes, sir. Well, usually where we go to edit it is it's still connected to the P2V helper, and so we just reach in. It just looks like another drive to the P2V helper. We just go in with Notepad and edit it. Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah.
It'll be on the D drive for the P2V helper, and it just looks like another volume, so you just go edit it.
One thing I wanted to mention on that, which I didn't when I was going through, if you're doing Windows NT and it's got terminal services installed, terminal services on NT puts all kinds of extra stuff in the boot INI file that
right.
you may need to edit out
as well.
You need
to clean that out.
Yeah, before you do the P2V.
Yeah, I think I had that in mind. I just lost over it. But yeah.
What changes should you make to the
protocol for the virtual machine? That's a good question. A lot of times if we've done the proper assessment, we've looked at how that physical machine used to run before we P2V it. there's a good chance that we may actually reduce the size of the page file once it becomes a virtual machine. If for no other reason, we usually have plenty of RAM on the ESX server. I do not overcommit ESX servers when it comes to RAM. The reason for that is I don't want to use the virtual machine swap file. And then if you're also using the page file inside of Windows, that becomes a real I/O challenge. So sometimes you'll decrease it. But I'm not telling you to decrease it. I'm just saying you need to look at the behavior of your application to see if that's proper.
And if you're going to decrease it, do it before you do the copy. It'll take less time.
It'll take less time.
I've got a couple of dozen E4 servers on Token.
A couple of dozen, do you?
Yeah, I've been having the trouble of migrating them to Ethernet first. Do you have a recommendation as to what?
They want us to die, though.
My best advice for you is if you can convert them to Ethernet, that'd be great. But there's nothing in our reconfig tool that's going to work with a token ring card. So
I picked up on that.
As far as a card?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got any lying around, if that's what you're asking me, I mean, I just use standard cards. I always try to use Intel cards, but that's just me. I mean, I don't make a dime using Intel. I'm just used to using it.
They want us to wrap it, guys.
Okay. Got to go, guys. Appreciate it.
They want to set up for the next session.
Boxes that have dual processors, quad processors.
Right.
Does P2D take that into consideration?
It does.
When we're doing migrations?
For most of the operating systems, it does. For instance, though, one egregious example is Windows NT. We don't support SMP capability in a VM for NT, so if it's running on a dual processor box physically, it'll become a single processor NT virtual machine.
Which is perfectly fine as far as
the Yeah. I haven't done any quad boxes on the physical side, and the reason for that is until recently, we really couldn't do those. We could go up to a two-processor virtual machine until recently. So that's just something I just haven't run into a whole lot yet.
That's what we're running into, like you mentioned before, the NT, the old apps and things that we can't find support for.
They're out there.
We have six servers. Two of them are single processors, two of them are duals, and two of them are quads.
No kidding. Well,
they're not getting used for anything.
For nothing. And they're NT boxes? Well, the quad boxes, you just test that one. I just don't have any experience on that one. But the dual processor box is going to get squashed to a single, which usually in a VM it's no kidding.
We're migrating them from dual 400 megahertz machines.
Right.
So
that's
pretty much.
Okay. Not usually.
I appreciate it.
What about Ultimate P2P? Have you heard of that?
Absolutely. Mike and Chris put that together, and I tell you what, it works. It works just fine. Keep in mind, a big part of the reconfiguration is the SCSI, just getting to a...
So I actually use that and
expand and then maybe make your original one bigger and then put the other stuff on other VMDKs. Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
I don't know the time frame like that, but each of these presentations are making it available at some time. It's online, so the last slide actually shows you. Remember the content over the 20 session and the burn right for the data.
I just had to get my bag.
Hey, Brian. How you doing?
Good.
Sounding good up there?
Oh, thanks. I have a lot of pressure.
All right. I'll load this thing up here.
give it to the two of you speaking?
Yeah, I'll be walking, and he'll probably use the podium mic. Okay.
Who's first?
Me.
All right, let me put number
this
one.
This will be after this.
Yeah.
Okay. Matter of fact, all of these, once you turn them on, these two, once you turn them on, will be on. So I can't move you back there.
Okay, no, he's not going to wear one. I think he's the only one wearing it.
Yeah,
one.
No.
He's going to work from the table.
Are you doing 25-25?
Right.
And then.
No, it's going to be probably.
Yeah, he's going to pick up the
QA.
Okay.
Cool.
Probably most of the way through.
Probably 80-20
or 90-10. Okay. Well, how many minutes are you going to dedicate? How many minutes to Q&A?
I'd like to dedicate 10 or 15 minutes, but it depends on how many questions we have on the way.
All right, cool. So I'll give you a signal at 10.
Yeah.
So that you know.
So I get 7 minutes left?
Yeah. All
right.
You know, speaking of time, so when we start this one, I got to give it to you because this is not working right, so I'm going to have to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless I'd say push this button.
Sure. So now,
there was a clicker here. No
otherwise, I'm going to take that part of the last one that we did. It was a slow, slow, slow. Thank you. I know that because you're a dragonborn.